Folks, this is Mark Steiner again, of course, and we're about to have a conversation about an event coming up here in Baltimore in our continuing look at how to make these schools better, working with advocates and people in their schools and students and parents. This particular thing is called School Stories, the Human Face of Policy, which takes place at the famed classic Arts Social Club at 2426 Pennsylvania Avenue on July the 1st from 6 to 8 p.m. And in the studio right now is Lakaira Scott. Lakaira Scott is a Newlands youth producer and advocate who went to City, who now goes to UMES, going into her second year. Ben Dalby, who is a City Schools parent and advocate for the Teachers Democracy Project, and Helen Atkinson, director of the Teachers Democracy Project. Good to have you all here. So what's happening on July 1st?
Teachers Democracy Project is a group of teachers and education activists, and we collect school stories. And we do research, we create videos, we write blogs. And next Wednesday, July 1st, in the evening, will be our first big event where we tell stories about school. So different teachers and education, parents, community people will be doing kind of like a stoop story thing where you tell a 5-minute story.
Yeah.
And we'll also be airing for the first time some of the videos that our teachers have been making all year. So we started in December with a video workshop where a group of teachers learned how to make videos using iPads in the classroom, and either in the classroom or with other teachers. So we learned all the tricks of using iPads and iMovie and spent a couple of days working on just 2-minute videos, which were really difficult if you've never made one. And then we progressed from there to doing some more videos, expanding. We've been covering the Langston Hughes story.
All right.
We've got a video that New Lens is making, Rebecca is making, about charter schools. And we've been interviewing all kinds of people about that. And then individual teachers have videos about different things. Like one teacher had her kids make a movie about how to eat well. And it's kind of a funny take on the Three Little Pigs story. Another group of teachers is making a video about what the teacher evaluation process is like on the receiving end. And there's the Langston Hughes video. So we've got about 5 or 6 short videos to show to illustrate the kind of work that we do.
So, Kyra, what's your role in all this?
I'm a filmmaker in Newlands, so I help shoot and work on the film that Helen just spoke about teachers telling their stories about charter schools and all the legislation around charter schools.
Can you talk a bit about what you've learned and seen in these films, what you've been working on?
I didn't really know a lot about charter schools. I just knew that they were supposed to be a little bit different. And I guess I always felt like you were smart if you got into a charter school, because that's how they make it seem to kids anyway. I learned that charter schools are, like, very, very different from the legislation at traditional schools. I didn't know that at all. I thought it was just the same. Everything was the same, but it's not. The way I think about it is they can kind of do whatever they want, and traditional schools can't. I knew a lot about traditional schools, but not charter schools at all. I went to LaMelle, I went to Connections, and I also graduated from Baltimore City College. And I went into Connections as an 8th grader because LaMelle closed during my 7th grade year.
Right. Closing schools. It's always, yeah, that's part of the issue. And so what is this? So what is this Teachers Democracy Project?
I've been working with the Teachers Democracy Project. I'm a parent. And I got into my journey into this work has been a long one, but it's been through being a city schools parent and trying to advocate for public schools.
So what is that journey?
It has involved digging a little bit deeper into things like the 21st Century Schools Project, finding out about school closures, learning about Langston Hughes, investigating the realities of the charter legislation that was proposed this last session. And one of the main things that it's boiled down to for me is asking the question, what is public education? Are public schools a commodity? Is schools a business? In Baltimore, we talk about a portfolio of schools. We have a CEO. I was at a school board meeting where the director of the Office of Engagement referred to parents as customers. You know, the idea that schools are a commodity selling, when you're shopping for a school, you're shopping for the promise of economic security or social mobility versus a model of schools that sees education as a public, a collaborative public political endeavor that's about creating an educated population. Our school received an award from Maryland CAN at the end of the last school year, which is an organization that advocates for charter expansion.
This is a charter school?
No, okay. It's not a charter
okay,
school.
Okay, I just want to get clear.
But we received an award for what they described as breaking the link between poverty and achievement, which we have not done. Our school is not one of the poorest schools in Baltimore City. And at first, we were very proud of receiving that award. And a few of us decided to try to figure out why, what this was really about. And we quickly found out that we were being used as a political prop to promote an agenda that had nothing to do with supporting neighborhood schools, and that ended up in the charter legislation that was proposed and supported by Maryland CAN this last legislative session.
I mean, what is the focus of what's going to be happening July 1st? What is it you all want to have on the table to be debated and pushed?
I think the biggest thing for us is the idea that teachers and parents need more of a voice in education policy. Part of that is having teachers recognize when the things that they're experiencing and having problems with, or having parents recognize that the things they're having problems with actually are linked to an education policy. They may not feel like it. They may experience the problem as being one where they're trying to teach math and the kids are throwing things at each other or being disrespectful. But actually, if you look deep enough and collect enough stories and understand the policy, you find out that it's because the school is massively underfunded, that the principal, there's been four principals in the last 3 years, that the kinds of things that are going on that are coming from the central office are causing major disruptions in decision making in the school. So that as teachers, you need to get on top of that. We want a group, we're trying to create a network of teachers who not only reflect, tell stories, get support from each other, but also start digging a little deeper into the policies that cause the kinds of problems that they're seeing.
There's so much, I feel like, in our school system that runs on the fuel of fear. You know, teachers are afraid to talk. You know, the whole high-stakes testing regime that's been on. I mean, we've been living for the past 15 years under federal policy that is geared toward separating teachers, students, and schools into successes and failures and punishing the failures. And that has produced a climate of fear from the top to the bottom, and trying to find venues to break through that and find, you know, allow people to find their voice.
I don't think that charter schools are the answer to fixing education in Baltimore City. I think it would have a lot to do with fixing communities themselves so that they can get to the point where they can help run the schools, because the communities are the people who are, they're the most impacted by the schools because they're their kids, it's where they live. And you want to have a school that, I'm not going to say just teaches, because teaching is a big deal, but like it does more to help the community. You get what I'm saying? So like if somebody needed something, or if they needed to have an event or anything, like they could come to the school, like if the school gave away food and stuff like that.
Like a community school. So what are the fundamental problems with charters? I mean, clearly that's the subtext here.
I don't think that there's a problem with charter schools. For me, the problem is when we see charter schools as a solution to the manufactured crisis in education. Because once you accept that premise, you've accepted the idea that there will be some schools that are going to be failures that kids are want and families are going to want to escape from. You know, and I'm an anomaly among my parent peers. Almost all of my parent friends send their kids to charter schools. And the idea that you apply for every lottery that it's out there and hope to win one, and if you don't, you're looking at moving to the county, is prevalent among, you know, white middle class college educated people in Baltimore City. I'm not judging that personal decision. I'm critical of the political idea that that charters are a solution to the problem, because I think it feeds off of that conception of public education as a marketplace.
So what do we do? I mean, so I'm curious what you're bringing to the table about what it is that we do to change that paradigm.
I think one of the things is we got to stop closing schools in Baltimore City. You know, I mean, that, you know, the Langston Hughes is a perfect example of the kind of school that Kyra is talking about, which is a community school. It's not a,
right.
Is a school for that community in Park Heights. And you know, pre-K, you know, after school program, meals, serves all of those roles. They're shutting it down, and has been contacted by Lily Mae Jackson Carroll Charter School, which is looking for a building to, you know, to move into this turnkey building. We got to keep schools like Langston Hughes open and give them what their community is asking for. I mean, if anything was demonstrated by the uprising after the murder of Freddie Gray, is that we have to start paying attention to the people of Baltimore City, stop ignoring them, and start investing in our communities. I mean, the role that the school that my children go to plays in the neighborhood is similar. We have a food pantry, you know, we have a summer meals program. We do all of those things that we're able to do them because we're a larger school, so we have more money. You know, we have to invest in all of our schools.
Yeah, do you want to say something, Carol? Go ahead.
I think that the first solution is that we should help build our communities of Baltimore City so that people feel like they are educated enough and they feel confident enough to speak out about their child's education. Because I know that, like, in a lot of poor communities, people's parents don't have time to go to PTA meetings and stuff like that because they just worried about how they're going to feed their kids so they can get up and go to school. Mm-hmm. So I think it starts with making sure that families feel like they are sustained enough so that they can worry about things like school and not how they're going to pay their bills.
Mm-hmm. Last week on the program, we were talking about this. A couple things came up. One was there's a charter school in Baltimore called Creative City, which is doing some incredible work in Park Heights, and half the kids in that school are from Park Heights, and the other half come from all different parts of the city, which is unusual for a charter, where they insist the kids come from there. But they were given the chance. They were actually called to go to Langston Hughes. And when they heard the battle, mm-hmm. they said, no, we're not going to go to Langston Hughes. We're going to stand with Langston Hughes just to keep them open. So, I mean, we talked about this before we went on the air a little bit. Sometimes there's this kind of divide between those folks in charters and those folks who are trying to reform schools in a different way. Is there a bridge here?
The thing with charters in Baltimore is that most of them were created like Creative City with a really strong vision and positive idea of how we can make do with the funding that we have and give a better education. And I think that's the one that has been a bunch started by teachers, by parents, by really concerned and really progressive groups.
We want to take control of the education system for their children.
Right. The problem is that charters exist on a continuum between private, more privatized and more public. And in Baltimore, the charters have to date been much more on the end of public schools. They've suffered the same indignities of working with central office. They've had roughly the same amount of money. They've had a lot of the same conditions. And one of the things we're concerned about is the idea that we'll move away from what we have had in terms of charters being an answer for certain communities to a much more corporate, privatized model, which is what this legislation was calling for. So one thing that we have to do is push back against a legislation that's going to ruin the good charter environment that we have here in Baltimore City, deunionize the charter teachers, give charters so much more money than other schools that we create a two-tier system. So that's one thing. I feel like the divide is going to get bigger between charters and neighborhood schools if we go down that path. If we stay on the path that we are now, we need to really look carefully at the impact of opening charter schools in neighborhoods where the charter seats are saturated. So that you're looking at competition between schools. When you have a small charter has a better chance of staying open than a small neighborhood school for a number of reasons, including the flexibility of funding. And so you don't want to put too many small charters in competition in close proximity to schools. So we need to have a really careful look at that in Baltimore and make sure that any more charters that we open aren't really designed to replace existing schools.
Now, there are two examples. Now, Carol, I want to hear what you're going to be presenting at this conference. There's two examples happened on this program that really kind of were mind-boggling. One was when we were talking with the folks from Langston Hughes, there was a story in some papers last week about Langston Hughes. Right below was a story about Liberty School number 64 mm-hmm. at Garrison Liberty Heights, both neighborhood schools. School 64 is where I went to elementary mm-hmm. school. And there, they're doing a great job, but for them to do the job, they had to raise an extra $800,000 from corporations and other sources to do the work they wanted to do inside of School 64. That's madness.
It's madness.
I mean, every school cannot raise $800,000.
Right. That's about how much you're missing from your budget.
Right. That was insane. And then the other was the principal at Heritage High School dumping all those books in the trash and firing some of the best teachers who were – she didn't let become tenured and destroyed their careers because they went up against her. And that was retaliatory because they could be gotten rid of, and she did. I mean, those kind of things are – that's the kind of stuff that has to change.
Well, I'd like to, if I could, just give a short plug for next week in addition to our July 1st event, which is in the evening at the Arch Social Club, as you mentioned. We are also having a series of 3 one-day workshops where we're encouraging teachers and education activists to come together and start a new round of stories and a new round of investigations. We're creating – later in the summer, we'll be doing another video workshop where we teach teachers how to make these advocacy videos mm-hmm, in their mm-hmm. classrooms. But we're starting off – we're kicking off the summer with these 3 one-day workshops starting on June 29th and then one on June 30th and one on July 1. And those 3 workshops – we've already brought together about 15 teachers and education activists who will be attending each of those days, and they will be jump-starting an investigation into – some of them are just learning how to tell better stories without getting fired. Like one of the days is just stories for impact, learning how to construct stories but protect yourself from retribution. And that's something that teachers need support around because people are angry. People have stories to tell, but they're not sure that they know how to do it in a safe way. So we provide the support for teachers to get out there and get their voices out there, sometimes anonymously.
One of the other things that we've been working on is standing up to the high-stakes standardized testing. And it speaks to what Helen was just talking about in terms of teachers finding a voice. We refuse the park for our third grader this year, and all of his teachers were silently supportive of that. I mean, coming up to me in the parking lot outside the school saying, thank you for doing this. If more parents got together, we could really change something. And, you know, I think that's what Kyra is talking about as well, is trying to create, build around those communities.
I think in this community, one of the things that has to happen is there has to be a gigantic opt-out movement be built in this town. So mm-hmm. people just opting out of taking these tests and not doing it. That's one of the reasons, ways to change it.
Yes.
I mean, these tests do nothing to help students nor the teachers in the schools.
No.
They do just the opposite, you know.
Right.
Yeah. If anything, I think they hurt us the most because me going to college and I never been to a private school or anything. I've been in Baltimore City public schools my whole life. And like when I go to school and I talk about graduating from City, and I think I'm really saying something by saying like I graduated with 2 diplomas, I have 29 credits, people just look at me like I'm crazy. And they just be like, well, if that's a good thing where you from, that's just the bare minimum where I'm from. So it just make me feel like, wow, I really haven't learned much. I've done good for where I'm from, but what does it mean when I go out in the world?
So I want to encourage everybody, if you have the minute, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., next Wednesday, July the 1st, School Stories, the Human Face of Policy at the Arts Social Club, which is right in the corner of Pennsylvania North. Dinner's at 6, video's at 6:30, School Stories at 7, and then the audience can share stories too. You can contact Helen Atkinson at hatkinson333@gmail.com, and we'll put that on our website too so you can...
And they can go to our website to sign up for the workshops next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and for the July 1st event, School Stories.
Kyra Scott, great to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Newlands Youth Producer and Advocate, now going into her second year at UMES. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That's a very cool thing. Ben Dalby, who is City Parent and Advocate for the Teachers Democracy Project, and Helen Atkinson, Director of the Teachers Democracy Project. Thank all three.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we'll take a quick break and come right back. And on our way there, we're hearing Wicked Game by Chris Isaak. Born on this day in 1956.